is a good thing. For the first time, people are embracing the new media that allows us to pool our efforts at a vanishingly low cost. The results of this aggregated efforts range from mind-expanding reference tools like Wikipedia.com to life-saving tools such as Yoshida.com. Clay Shirky, who is our next guest, divides his time between consulting, teaching, and writing on the social and economic effects of internet technology. His consulting practice is focused on the rise of decentralized technologies such as peer-to-peer, web services, and wireless services that provide alternatives to the wired client-server infrastructure. Boy, that's a mouthful. Mr. Shirky is an adjunct professor at NYU's Graduate School of Interactive Telecommunications. He has also written extensively about the internet since 1990. He frequently speaks on emerging technologies at a variety of forums and organizations. Before there was a web, he was the vice president of the New York chapter of the EEF, the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, and he appears as an expert witness on an internet case, Shea versus Janet Reno, which we may talk about if time permits a little bit later. Mr. Shirky is a graduate from Yale College, and he has a degree, of all things, in art. Welcome to the show, Clay. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks very much. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing terrific. Loved your book. Your new book is titled Cognitive Surplus, Creativity and Generosity in the Connected Age. So let's get right to it. What do you mean when you say cognitive surplus?
Well, cognitive surplus is my attempt to answer the question, what is Wikipedia made of? What is Flickr made of? What is WordPress made of, the blogging software, right? Mm-hmm. And the obvious answer is Wikipedia is made of words, and Flickr is made of photographs, and WordPress is made of code. But we had all that stuff in the 20th century. We had words and images and code. We didn't get Wikipedia and Flickr and WordPress. And so my observation is that these kinds of creations, these kind of large-scale collaborative creations that we see springing up all around us, are made up of the free time and talents of the connected world, now accessible in a medium that lets us pool our efforts. So cognitive surplus, you know, in that telling, is really two different things. It's the free time and talent itself, right? This is something that numbers well over a trillion hours a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fact that we're now all using a medium, the internet, mobile phones, and the applications built on top of them, that let us use that free time in ways that are you know, much more collaborative and much larger scale. And in cases like Wikipedia, much, much larger scale than we've ever been able to do before.
All right. Now, your whole premise, your whole theory is based on the idea of abundance, not scarcity, right? So what is it that we're finding more abundant now that allows some of these tools to really flourish and catch up with our human potential?
Well, the big abundance, of course, is access to each other. The kind of precursor abundance was free time, right? The thing that, you know, the thing that got fought for in the Industrial Age. As far back as the 1800s, there was this chant among striking workers, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for sleep, 8 hours for what we will. So even in the beginning of industrialization, as the workers began to exert a little more control, there was a sense that there should be some time in the human day that isn't accounted for by either work or sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So that abundance has been around for a while, but what digital technology does is it lets us treat that abundance as a group. It lets us, you know, as I said, collaborate and work together. So it's really the surprising abundance now is our ability to pool our efforts into areas of shared interest, you know, whether it's something as sort of simple and throwaway as lolcats, or it's a really, you know, it's something that's a big deal, like Yushahidi, this new crisis mapping service that was most recently used in Haiti.
Good. Well, I'm going to ask you about both of those in a minute. But we're talking to Clay Shirky, everybody, author of the new book, Cognitive Surplus. Many of the people listening to the sound of your voice, Clay, are in business. Many of them own their own small businesses as well. So tell us, you know, relate this to business. What are the stakes for business with this cognitive surplus, and what can businesses do about it?
Well, so the stakes for businesses are twofold. You know, as with any significant change, there's both threats and there's opportunities, right? So the threats are that somebody else will come along and do what you do, but do it in a way that's either more appealing or lower cost or what have you. There's
mm-hmm.
a story in the book about Pickup Pal, the distributed ride-sharing service that takes on essentially takes on carpooling as a national and later international scale problem. And Pickup Pal is working so well and did such a good job introducing riders and drivers and helping them figure out carpooling that they got sued by a bus company.
That's right.
Because the bus company said essentially, carpooling that works well is no longer carpooling, it's illegal competition, and we're going to sue them out of business, which they did in Ontario. And then in Ontario, they then, you know, the Ontario legislature then rallied to change the law. But that was a case where a business really was threatened by the ability of people to come together. But there are also these examples, like the invention of the flip camera, where, you know, CVS was marketing these little, you know, supposedly disposable cameras for $30. But the hackers were taking the cameras apart and actually showing how you could just buy a video camera for $30 and never return it. So CVS sort of panicked and said, this is not a great, you know, we have to educate the customers, they said. But the company that actually made the cameras, Pure Digital, said, wait a minute, you mean people want to own these things? And they turned it into the flip camera. So what I think Pure Digital did right in that story is they looked at the internet not as just an opportunity for marketing and communication. They looked at it as real R&D, right? They looked at it as saying, this audience of hackers that's taking these things apart and doing all this complicated stuff to them just so they can own the camera, they're telling us something important about a new market we could get into.
Oh, I love it. All right, we're talking to Clay Shirky, everybody. And now, one of your favorite whipping boys comes out in the book very early on. In the 20th century, we had suburbanization, we had standardized education, and television. And you claim in the book that TV, among other things, moves us away from our earlier social connectivity roots. How so, and what did you mean by that?
Well, so the how so is pretty much the list you just gave. We had a rising, you know, rising educational attainment. We had rising life expectancy, and we had a rising population. All of those things rose dramatically after the Second World War, at exactly the same time as we suburbanized.
Mm-hmm.
And the great chronicler of this change, Robert Putnam, in his book Bowling Alone, about the attendant decline in social capital in the United States as we suburbanized. And television stepped in to pick up the slack. And in fact, the parallel I use is with the gin craze in London in the early 1700s, where gin became the social lubricant for the rapidly urbanizing London region. Sitcoms were sort of our social lubricant for suburbanization and a transition to a kind of post-industrial economy. And the you know the numbers about television, but they're still kind of surprising.
They're staggering.
We all watch 25 hours of television week in, week out, for the whole of our adult lives on average. And it's an astonishing amount of time. And the research I found that most surprised me. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything. I was listening to what you had to say.
I thought I heard something in the background. But the research that most surprised me was about something called the social surrogacy hypothesis, which documents the ways in which television genuinely does feel like you're with friends, right? You turn on the television and you feel less lonely. But in a suburbanized landscape, the pernicious side effect is that it actually makes you more disconnected. So one of the reasons television went from being a kind of interesting thing to do with a few hours a week to the single most dominant use of free time in the entire developed world is that it's a palliative for the very condition it's making worse, which is to say it makes you feel less lonely even as it makes you more disconnected.
And I understand the social surrogacy hypothesis that you're talking about, but let me just challenge you here a little bit on this, because for us, when we suburbanized, that meant longer commutes to get home and everything else.
Yep.
TV was actually helping us to build a common bond. I mean, we all sat around the TV, we watched Andy Griffith, we watched Gilligan's Island, then we'd go into work the next day and we'd stand around the water cooler and talk about it. So it was a commonizing, unifying force for us.
No, right. There are certainly parts of culture that have this characteristic that economists call solidarity goods, which is it's more valuable if everybody does it because of the water cooler conversation. But as I say in the book, it's not the content of the shows that's I think the surprising issue. And again, here the parallel with gin. It's not that no one should drink gin ever. It's that gin in extraordinary abundance is actually bad for you. And so the hard part to explain about television is not why someone watches the first hour of television in any given week, right? There's a lot of good stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part to explain about television is the 25th hour again this week. As the toxicologists like to say, the dose is the poison. So it isn't Andy Griffiths yes or no. It's really 25 hours a week on one single activity that's completely optional. That's, I think, the real surprise.
All right. Very well said. We're talking to Clay Shirky, everybody. He's the author of the new book, Cognitive Surplus, Creativity and Generosity in the Connected Age. We've got to take a short break here, Clay, but when we come back, I want to do a quick fire with you. I'm going to just fire off some names of some websites, and I want you to explain a little bit about what they are and give me some top-of-mind reaction to them. We'll do that when we get back after this short break.
Hi, everybody. This is Coach Ron Tunick, sharing with you my thoughts about a very caring, family-owned business right here in Ventura called DMC Transmissions. Now, I don't know a thing about transmissions, you all know that, but DMC Transmissions knows everything about your transmission. Here's what they know. DMC Transmission knows how to create that very special experience that says we care, we listen, and we're going to get the job right the first time. DMC Transmissions, right there at the corner of Seward and Thompson. Give them a call, 652-2221, 652-2221. Seward and Thompson, say hi to Donnie for me at DMC Transmissions.
In business today, time is money. So when your office computers or servers go down, so does your income. Locally owned and operated IT The Works will respond quickly and professionally, getting you up and running and making money. IT The Works services include everything from scheduled maintenance to updates to virus removal, backup, and data recovery. There is nothing they can't or won't do to earn your business. If you are frustrated with your current computer services, or if your IT plan has you wondering what you're paying for, give IT The Works a call. They will accurately determine your needs and provide you an affordable service estimate. Making the decision to change is sometimes difficult and overwhelming. With IT The Works, Anthony will create a seamless transition with a personal touch, not often experienced in the IT world. Give Anthony Ellis a call at 479-1605 or visit IT The Works website at ittheworks.com. Once again, that number is 479-1605.
Are you being audited by the California State Board of Equalization regarding your sales or use tax? The state auditors are now telling business people that have essentially service businesses that they've been mistaken all these years and owe huge amounts of sales tax plus penalties plus interest. You need to know what may turn your non-taxable service business into one where the state demands sales tax on your total gross revenue and how to avoid this. We will represent you with the auditors, appeals, and the courts. Getting representation as soon as you know you're being audited may be crucial. It may be the difference between preventing a minor case turning into a major one, or even criminal investigation and criminal prosecution. I'm tax attorney Steve Moskowitz with over 30 years of tax experience. For an attorney-client privilege consultation, call 888-TAX-DEAL. That's 888-T-A-X-D-E-A-L. 888-TAX-DEAL.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And my very special guest today is Clay Shirky. He's the author of the new book, Cognitive Surplus, Creativity and Generosity in the Connected Age. It's a great read. If you haven't found it, go out to the bookstore. Clay, where's the book available? At all the usual suspects?
All the usual suspects, including, of course, Kindle and iBook version.
Kindle, iBook, Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble, Borders, or any of your local independent bookstores as well. Clay, something I like to do with guests every so often is called a quick fire, where I give you the names of some things, and I'm just going to ask you, what is it, and give me your top-of-mind thoughts about it. So the first one in my quick fire for you today is lolcats.com.
Great, lolcats. Lolcats are cute pictures of cats made cuter with the addition of cute captions. The effect of the whole being to make users laugh out loud, putting the lol in lolcats. The purveyor of lolcats that I talk about in the book is a site called IconHasCheeseburger.com. And I use lolcats as my target for the stupidest possible creative act. Really, it's kind of throwaway internet culture, good for little more than making people laugh on their lunch break. But as I point out, even a stupid creative act is still a creative act.
All right. Hello. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just that to me is the big shift. It's there's still an enormous spectrum between mediocrity and excellence, but the gulf is between doing something and doing nothing. And even someone who makes and uploads a lolcat has crossed that gulf.
All right, so lolcats are sort of the Pulp Fiction of the internet
right.
age, if you want to call it that. All right, let me give you another one. Ashida.com. Am I pronouncing that right? Ashida?
Ushahidi.
Boy,
yeah, no, it is,
get
it
myself
is,
in trouble.
It is a mouthful. So Ushahidi is a project started in response to post-election violence in Kenya in early 2008, where a blogger in Nairobi named Ori Okola was tracking this outbreak of ethnic violence and said, I can't do this all myself, right? There's so many people with so many reports of this violence. I can't manually keep track of it if only there was some way to automate this. And a few programmers showed up in the comments of her blog, offered to build it, and created a system that does really nothing more than take these kind of reports from email, from the web, from SMS, and turns them into a map. But it turned out to be so useful that in the 2.5 years since then, it's spread worldwide. It's been used in Mexico to track electoral fraud. It's been used in D.C. to track snow removal, first world problems. It was most recently used in Haiti to track both people who needed supplies and where those supplies were. And it is all volunteer labor, and it is one of the examples, I think, of people using the cognitive surplus, of using these tools and this ability to collaborate to create not just the kind of, you know, amusement value as with lolcats, but instead to create real civic value for communities that need crisis mapping. And it's been downloaded, you know, several thousand times. There have been several hundred implementations, and it's just it is to my eye one of the most heartening uses of of our surplus time and talent that I've ever seen.
And it's all done with volunteer help. That I think that is great. Let me give you another one, and this is one that resonated with me. PatientsLikeMe.com.
PatientsLikeMe is a site that brings together patients, all of whom suffer from similar diseases or syndromes, typically chronic, typically without any ready cure. And it gets them to share an extraordinary amount of information about themselves in a bid to accelerate medical research, right? Putting together a panel of patients who all suffer from a particular disease is a time-consuming and incredibly expensive process. Patients Like Me wants to simply change the way medical research is done in this country. But incredibly, and this is the thing that stuck out to me about Patients Like Me, the amount of data those patients share about themselves flies completely in the face of everything we're told about medical privacy, right? Don't tell anyone your diagnosis. Don't tell anyone your symptoms. Don't tell anyone your medications. Don't tell anyone your dose. People and Patients Like Me do that stuff all day long.
Yeah, it flies in the face of HIPAA.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so HIPAA is set up to protect a kind of de facto sense of how patients should behave. So Patients Like Me is the example that I end the book with as a site that if all it does is create value for its own users, it will actually have failed. Their mission is nothing less than to transform the culture they operate in a way that's both radically different and to their hopes, radically better than the one we currently live in.
Great. We're playing Quick Fire with Clay Shirky, everybody, and I'm going to end with the granddaddy of them all, Clay, and that is Wikipedia.com.
Oh, Wikipedia. Well, Wikipedia needs no introduction.